Hello and welcome to the show that's already broken three of its New Year's resolutions. It's going to make it four as soon as that drinks globe arrives. It was date night last night. Me and Matt Stanger, we went to watch Ipswich at Fulham. It did not go well for Ipswich. It wasn't going well for Plymouth Argyle this season, but they had a very happy Christmas indeed. Are they going to survive? And while we're out west, what's going on at Yeovil? Are they going to get sucked back in? Producer Ben is no more. Behold the glorious new reign of producer Tayo. We've got a new section. We've got Joe Crilly from William Hill. We've got Ali from Not the Top 20. We've got the Fan League. We're halfway through the season. It's the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill. Morning all.
Good morning.
It's been a long time since we all saw each other. Ali, you were with us at Craven Cottage last night.
I wish you told me it was a date between you and Matt before I decided to third wheel. But
No, it's all right. We're very open on these things.
Modern.
Well, yeah, I mean, Adam Bate was a friend of the show, Adam Bate. It was a great big day out.
Real lads on tour.
Yeah. I've got to say, because I am now an ex-football journalist. Mm. So this was the first time in a very, very long time that I've actually just gone to watch a game without having to write 1,000 words on the full-time whistle. I can see why people like it.
You did come up with 12 lines, though, and you had your laptop there.
Now you're just going to say 1,000 words.
Oh, at the very, very least. We're going to talk a bit more about that game in a bit. We're also joined by Joe Crilly. Joe, your New Year's Eve, you told us last time out you were going to spend just playing Football Manager with your mate. How did it go?
Oh, it was wild. I mean, you should have been there. You should have seen the carnage that ensued. We very nearly finished a full season.
That's amazing.
I know. It
takes me 6 hours to do pre-season.
Well, do you know what it is? When you're playing with somebody else, you want to
crack on.
Yeah.
Yeah, crack on and get it done.
You want to hold those guys up. So, I think we raced through it a little bit, but it was all good.
No worries. I'll tell you what, let's say hello as well to producer Tayo. Tayo, welcome to the team.
Thanks for having me, and Happy New Year, everyone. I'm sorry I missed the date last night. Sounds like a good one.
It was sensational. There was beer. You weren't like not invited for any reason. Just to be clear, you know, it's not like we've got an initiation ceremony coming up for you after the show with paddle boards. Let's get cracking with our new news in brief section. Mark Warburton and Frank McParland have paid the price for Nottingham Forest's inconsistency. A run of 1-7 and the indignity of a home defeat to Sunderland ended their reign at the City Ground. Aitor Karanka is a favourite to take over, though Nigel Clough is polling well on the Nottingham Post website. You know who the leader in the poll is, Matt?
Nope.
Martin O'Neill. Sheffield Wednesday, they're in the market for a new manager too, though they've already filled the chief executive role with former Charlton CEO Katrine Meyer. Favourite for the manager's job, though, Paul Lambert. Now, not everyone who spent time with their family over the holidays can boast a story like this. Preston North End's Kevin O'Connor was bought a lottery ticket by his uncle in Castlebridge, County Wexford, as a present, and he only bloody won 1 million euros, which is about £900,000 in Brexit money. He nearly missed out on it, too. O'Connor was reminded to check his numbers by his mum. He says, very diligently, that his main focus is on helping Preston climb the championship and hopefully challenge for a Premier League spot over the next couple of months. We will certainly be keeping an eye on the Preston North End car park to see how much truth there is in that. There are more warming family stories from Forest Green Rovers, where father and son both saw red in their 2-1 defeat away to Wycombe Wanderers. Manager Mark Cooper was sent to the stands after protesting the sending off of his son Charlie. Well done all. And drone stopped play. We'll hear more about this later. During the 2-1 defeat to Crawley, Yeovil and Crawley players forced to leave the pitch with 9 minutes to go in the score level. Advice of the police, apparently. Crawley manager Harry Keel said the unexpected timeout worked in his team favour, giving him a chance to refocus his players. And he was rewarded with Thomas Verheid's winner 8 minutes into injury time. That is your news in brief. Nottingham Forest, so Ali, Mark Warburton, Frank McParland. They're a funny one, because whenever I've watched them, they look like there's a good team in there. Lots of exciting young players. Is this a bit harsh?
It it looks that way, doesn't it? And you're right to say that they do play an exciting brand of football with a large number of young players, a lot of whom have come through the academy, which is obviously among the most sort of storied and famous academies in English football and continues to produce quality like Ben Brereton, Matty Cash, Joe Worrell, to name just a few. The results had been really poor for about 6-7 weeks or so, and I wonder whether the new owners, who, you know, spoke a very good game when they arrived, and they came across like they would be very level-headed and, you know, wouldn't be quite as trigger happy as the former owner, but, you know, they've sort of shown their cards now, because, you know, one poor run and Warburton's out the door, and I think it does seem a little bit harsh.
Yeah, they're going to have to make sure this next appointment works. Joe, over at William Hill, what do the books say for his replacement?
Well, as you mentioned, Aitor Karanka is the 6-5 favourite, so he's very much ahead of the pack there. Oscar Garcia, who spent a season at Brighton, is 4-1, along with Paul Heckingbottom, who's at Barnsley. But as you mentioned as well, Nigel Clough, his name comes up every single time the Forest job is available. He's 6-1. You've got former Forest player Roy Keane. They're a club with such a storied history and with such a number of former players that could potentially take over. Martin O'Neill as well, 16-1. You do often see these names thrown in every single time that the job becomes available. But Aitor Karanka, very much the front runner.
Nigel Clough's turned it down before, Matt, but Karanka, that's an interesting shout. He got Borough up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Forest board have been sort of briefing that they've got a big name lined up, and Karanka would certainly be that. And you look at their defensive record this season, they've conceded 42 goals, and that's exactly what Karanka's going to turn around straight away if he comes in.
Now, Sheffield Wednesday, Katrine Mayer, formerly of Cholton. I don't like to judge people on the show, but it hadn't gone well for her. I don't think there were too many leaving parties being thrown after her, well, for her, quite possibly after she left. What's the thinking here?
Yeah, it's a PR disaster for Sheffield Wednesday at the moment, isn't it? Appointing a chief exec who was constantly at war with the Charlton fans during a spell there. Lots of accusations about her inexperience in the role. And there's a clip actually doing rounds on social media at the moment of a panel event where she refers to fans as customers, which never goes down well. No. And she also says it's weird that fans feel a sense of ownership towards their football club. So doesn't really get it, I don't think.
No. Not a particularly easy job, the chief executive role of a championship football club, but it does help if you come in with some initial understanding there. Good luck, Katrine. Good luck. Any idea for next Sheffield Wednesday manager? Paul Lambert seems to be leading the way. Who would you go for?
Well, Lambert did a decent job at Blackburn when he came in there, and we were all pretty disappointed to see him leave, actually. But I think he just decided that under the Venkies he found it too difficult a job to work. He would certainly keep them in the division and avoid any threat of relegation this season, sliding down after that defeat to Burton at home the other day. But I don't know. I mean, I would look for a younger manager myself. We mentioned Paul Hurst last week and look to build something.
Joe?
Paul Lambert is 1-3, which is the price that Steve McLaren was when we last spoke last week. Steve McLaren has drifted to 4-1. Paul Hurst is in from 25-1 to 14-1. But I posted a couple of days ago, because Paul Lambert came in from 20-1 into 4-6 over the space of about 3 or 4 hours on New Year's Eve, I think it was. And I put something on Twitter, and a few fans got in touch and said that they wouldn't particularly like Paul Lambert. Given the couple of seasons that Wednesday have had moving into the playoffs in the last couple of years, and Paul Lambert didn't really do too well at Wolves with some of the players that they brought in, I think they would want somebody slightly more ambitious who would be looking up the table rather than consolidating, despite the fact that they are just the 5 points away from the drop zone.
Ali, Paul Hurst is basically living his own personal brilliant football manager game. Started in non-league, got Grimsby up, doing incredibly well with Shrewsbury right now. Do you think he could handle a job like Sheffield Wednesday?
He's handled all the jobs he's had so far, and there aren't many managers with an unblemished managerial record in the Football League, because they so often get sacked when things don't go well. So out of all the candidates, I suppose he'd probably be a little bit outside of the norm of the same old names that we're always seeing. But this is a club that needs a bit of an overhaul of a squad, which is ageing. But in the short term, just need to make sure they don't get sucked into that relegation battle. So it depends whether the owners are thinking short term or mid to long term, trying to build something a little bit different.
Well, right now, the way results have been, they could get sucked into a relegation battle. They're only 6 points above the drop zone. Let's take a closer look at the Championship. Tyo, bring up the anthemic music. New Years are supposed to be filled with hope and aspiration, but there was nothing but despair for three of the division's biggest clubs. Sunderland demonstrated once again that reports of their revival were overstated. They lost at home to Barnsley. Managerless Sheffield Wednesday, as we've just been hearing, managed to lose 3-0 at home to a Burton side that is refusing to go quietly into the night. And Aston Villa, where did this come from? Battered Bristol City 5-0.
What did Santa have in his sack for Bolton? 3 wins out of 4 over Christmas as the Trotters edged out Hull 1-0 on New Year's Day. While high-flying Derby had to settle for a point at home to Sheffield United, who pegged back the Rams with an equaliser from Leon Clark. And Leeds could only draw 0-0 with managers from Nottingham Forest.
As you've already heard, last night Fulham tore Ipswich apart in a spectacular 7-minute spell at Craven Cottage. They move up to 10th. Brentford became the latest team to fail to stop Wolverhampton Wanderers. Wolves are now 12 points clear of Derby at the top. They should probably start planning for the Premier League now. And we all wrote Birmingham off last week on our prediction show. We said they were getting relegated. Were we hasty? The Blues moved off the bottom with a fine 2-0 win at Reading.
Norwich avenged their 4-0 thrashing at Millwall earlier in the season with a 2-1 win at Carrow Road, while a Tony Pulis revolution is underway at Middlesbrough, who beat Preston 3-2 thanks to a couple of goals from centre-half Daniel Ayala. And it's now 4 defeats in a row for Cardiff, who threw away the lead in a 2-1 defeat at QPR.
All right, last night, as we said, we were all in force at Craven Cottage to watch Ipswich, which was kind of a thankless task because they barely touched the ball in the first half, right up until the moment where they took the lead. And then they got torn apart in 7 minutes in the second half. Interestingly, just seconds after I'd turned to Matt and said, you can see it in Fulham's eyes, they've lost all belief. Yeah, as accurate as ever. Let's talk about Fulham very, very briefly, because they had all of the ball. That was their first half was basically Fulham in a nutshell, wasn't it? They dominated play, stretching Ipswich all over the place, and managed to go in 1-0 down.
I think you weren't far wrong saying they'd lost all belief. Maybe that was slightly a step too far. But genuinely, at 11v11, it didn't look like Fulham were going to be roaring back into that game. Ipswich's game plan had worked perfectly. And it wasn't a pretty game plan, but it involved trying to win free kicks basically anywhere in Fulham's half, from which they scored a goal on the stroke of half time. So you can't really fault Ipswich's style when it was getting a result that they probably wouldn't have got if they tried to match Fulham for passing and movement, which we know Fulham are very good at. But yeah, it was classic Fulham in that first half, and I think the 4-goal period has papered over some cracks for me.
Matt, 2 goals for Abubakar Kamara, clearly a talent on the rise.
Interesting opinion about that. Yeah, I mean, I saw the first half slightly differently, to be honest. I know we're all sitting there together, but it's a game of opinions, isn't it? And I actually thought Fulham did quite well in the first like quarter of an hour or so to get round the Ipswich defence, which was very deep on a few occasions. And Luke Chambers made a couple of decent blocks, which we pointed out. But Kamara, I mean, he missed that sitter, didn't he, right in front of us, where he just had to get something on it, and it would have given Fulham the lead, and then they probably would have gone on from there and maybe won 4-0 or something. But
I've never seen anyone play so badly and still come out, and he should have got a hat-trick because he missed a sitter at the end as well.
Oh, he missed an absolute sitter, but also it was his involvement in the red card for Jordan Spence as well, chasing back a ball in his own half and then getting ploughed into the advertising board. So he played his part, definitely.
He also, let's be clear, the first goal, he blocked a shot from a Fulham player and then stuck it in from half a yard. And his second goal was heavily deflected and left Bielakowski no chance. So, you know, it wasn't like it wasn't the most refined finishing performance from AK-47.
Yeah. No, I think they might be a different team with a different striker somehow, but we'll see how that goes. Anyway, Ipswich, we have loads of messages on Twitter. Should say, by the way, hi to Paul Hankey, our new social media community manager, who's with us now. So keep following us on Twitter. which is at The Totally Show, and on Facebook, which is at The Totally Football Show, and Instagram, which is one of the two. You'll find it if you just try hard enough. We'll be a lot more active, have a lot more stuff there. Anyway, on the Twitter, I think the Buffet Bowler speaks for all Ipswich fans that got in contact with us, saying, is there a set of fans more bored than Ipswich? Same division for ages, I think 18 years now. No cup runs, minimal entertainment. I'm even bored writing this tweet. Are Ipswich boring, Matt?
They've not been boring, I wouldn't say, this season. I mean, you know, they've had a pretty decent campaign given the amount of investment that they had in the summer. And Mick McCarthy brought in a couple of great players in Waghorn and Joe Garner. And people talk at this stage of the campaign about, oh, we need a goal scorer. That's what we need just to climb into the playoffs. And he got two there for under 1.5 million combined. So I think he's done a decent job again this season, but his relationship with the fans is so strained now, and they just don't see it going anywhere. It's been stagnation over the last 10 years under Marcus Evans, and they've reached a point where they really need to have some sort of a plan for where they're heading.
Ali, we got another message from Joe Ripcord. He says, Ipswich look to be going nowhere fast. If you were the owner, what would you do? Go for broke for a tilt at promotion? Change manager? Invest in a long-term youth-focused approach? In fairness, I think they do that already. Propose a merger with Norwich may not be a sensible suggestion from Joe. What would you do? Mick McCarthy is obviously he's out of contract at the end of the season. I spoke to him just before Christmas. He said there'd been no approach from the club. There'd been no movement from him. It was very much a kind of wait and see. If you were Marcus Evans, what would you do?
Yeah, Evans gets a fair share of the stick as well for what's going on at Ipswich, for that sort of stagnation which always gets mentioned. And I think the important thing when you get relegated from the Premier League is often the first few years. And they didn't do that well in those first few years. And that's really come back to bite them, because now they are definitely, if not going backwards, standing still, which you can't really do in the Championship. In terms of what I would do, I mean, they're a club that loses around £7 million every year. So they can't compete really financially at this stage in the Championship. So what you need to be hoping for is basically a Huddersfield. So if you can set up a recruitment department that can beat everyone else, by which I mean bring in good, young, cheap players that you can either sell on or who somehow get you promoted like Huddersfield did, the only problem with that is that everyone's trying to do that. It's not as easy as that, although Huddersfield achieved it. That's really what you're hoping for, because pound for pound, you're not going to be able to compete.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with Ipswich. They really can't compete on wages, certainly not on transfer fees. Oliver Friston tweets to say it's 16 consecutive seasons in the second tier, which is a really good tweet. One, because it's accurate, and two, because it gives the false impression that we're recording this live and constantly getting feedback from listeners, which I'm very, 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 very happy about.
It could be worse, though. I mean, Oldham have been in League One for, I think, 20 successive seasons now. So,
who was it? It was in the third division for about 40 years. Was that Rochdale?
Rochdale, yeah.
Yeah. Could be heading back there very soon as well. We had another message from Nathan Beals, which is an interesting one. He said, do you think Mick McCarthy gets an easy time in the media due to his experience and personality? He also says we've played some of the most negative football in this division for years. I field this one. I think he might get an easier deal from the mainstream media, because he's a very difficult person to dislike. He's very open, very honest, almost always to a fault. And he is the kind of person, he has certain values that he puts on his players. He wants, if they see someone new in the training ground, they have to shake hands, they have to behave in a respectable manner. Honest to God, if I had a kid who was good at football, I'd want them at Ipswich rather than anywhere else. So I think that there might be a sort of subconscious thing. Also, he's, you know, very, very big, and you don't want to get on the wrong side of him. But that is going to wear off, and it certainly seems like it's worn off for the fans. Matt, what would you do?
It's a really difficult one, isn't it? Because he has done a good job there, if you look at it objectively. Like Ali said, it feels like they're moving backwards a bit. I mean, they got in the playoffs in 2014-15 when they lost to Norwich, and they finished seventh the season after, and then they drifted, and then they'd lower mid-table last year. So it does feel as if they need some sort of a change, something to freshen up. And football's meant to be fun at the end of the day, and if fans are bored, then why not make the change? I understand that, you know, I'm not a moron. It is people's livelihoods and everything else, and Mick McCarthy's dedicated so much service to the game. But I think look to build with a younger manager who'll come in with new ideas, put together a 2-3 year plan, and then take it from there, really, because they're not in any risk at the moment of being relegated. And you perhaps, if they did make a change, I mean, I don't think they will in the near future, but if you're not planning to give McCarthy that contract in the summer, why not do it now? Make that decision, give a new man 6 months to get used to the squad, make his plans for the summer, and then next season they can really look to kick on.
Oh, Matt Stanger calls for the head of Mick McCarthy.
That's not exactly what I said.
Maybe an ex-journalist, but the spirit still runs through my veins. Usually we talk about players who stand out at this point. Last night was a really bad game for finding Ipswich players who stand out. I think Bartosz Bukowski is one of the best keepers in the league. Is that fair?
Yeah, he made a cracking save last night as well, didn't he, that we all put our head in our hands at. Kiefer Moore, he stood out this season. Oof. Obviously, he's on loan at Rotherham, but...
Yeah, well, he's back now, but he's conspicuous by his absence. Mick McCarthy pretty much confirming last night that he's not going to get picked in the matchday squad because, of course, if he plays for two different teams, that's him done. He can't play for anyone else.
So. Yeah, I think there was a quote from McCarthy back in November when they were discussing Kiefer Moore's return, and it sounded pretty clear to me that he intends to sell him, raise some funds, and then reinvest that in players that he wants.
Yep. Luke Chambers, I've always been a big fan of. And I must mention Dominic Iorfa, because before the game in the pub, I said, look out for Dominic Iorfa. He is really, really quick. And midway through the first half, I pointed and shouted, look, I told you how quick he was. And it was Grant Ward. And I should probably look at getting glasses or at least getting a team sheet.
They've got Callum Connolly on loan as well from Everton, who was part of England's under-20 World Cup winning squad in the summer. He's done pretty well. He's got a few goals actually recently. He was playing fullback in the summer for England when I saw them. And he's been playing defensive midfield for Ipswich. He didn't have a great game last night, but then I don't think many did in that 7-minute period in the second half.
One final thing to end on, because I have a lot of fondness for Ipswich, a really lovely football club. Their youth teams, who generate so many players, are actually sponsored in some cases by ex-players. I think Kieran Dyer is a sponsor of one youth team. Matt Holland, I'm fairly sure, is a sponsor of another. That's the kind of club it is. So, I wish them only the best.
Well, they're getting chances as well. They've been quite unlucky with injuries to their young players. Teddy Bishop, a few years ago, looked like one of the brightest young things in English football, has suffered horrendous injuries for about 2 years, but he's just about back. Dozel, obviously, was a bright young thing who got a horrible injury on the opening day. And the two that have played the most this season are Tristan Nydam and Flynn Downs, both central midfield players. And they've got some, you know, they've had some decent time on the pitch, but again, disrupted by injury. So, you know, probably more than the average EFL team, they do give chances to their young players.
All right, that's Ipswich. When we come back after the break, we'll be playing the Fan League. Listeners, you like stats, and so do I. So have a bang on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone Razor don't go back to their old one. I know. Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. It's an FA Cup special on Fan League this week. 13 cup ties on the slip. 12 of them involve Football League teams. Let's have a look. We'll start Joe Crilly's Bolton against Huddersfield. I think Bolton could get a result here. Matt?
Yeah, I think they could, yeah. I mean, three wins out of four over Christmas in great form, and Gary Medine banging in the goals after I said they lacked a goal scorer.
Ali?
Not sure Huddersfield will really care about this one, no. So why not Bolton?
Yeah, I concur. All right, full support for Bolton there. A broad grin on Joe Crilly's face. Bournemouth against Wigan. I think Bournemouth will probably... If you're Paul Cook, you don't really want to go for the FA Cup this season, do you?
No, they just want to focus on the league, don't they? And... I mean, we should give a shout out to George here and mention Wigan's 7-0 thrashing of Oxford over the festive period. And they've been in brilliant form. And yeah, they're just going to look to keep that entire top spot in League One.
Ellie, Bournemouth?
Yeah, Bournemouth. Yeah,
no complaints there. Fulham against Southampton. Southampton plunging down the table. Fulham, yeah, on their day, could probably beat anyone. Do you think this is their day?
Yeah, Kamara hat-trick.
Ali?
No, Premier League savvy will take Southampton through there.
Right, Blackburn, Hull. Hull are just looking disarray at the moment. I can't see beyond Blackburn, Matt.
Yeah, we'll definitely rest a lot of players, I'm sure. But yeah, I think we'll sneak this one.
Ali?
I'm going to go with Hull.
Ooh, really?
Cheers, Ali.
What have you seen of Hull? Or are you just trying to upset Matt?
They've got some good players in the squad, if not a very cohesive unit. And if Blackburn are going to rest players, I'm not sure how good their reserves are. So I'm going to go with Hull.
Fair enough.
I've always preferred George.
Coventry against Crisis Club Stoke. Don't even know if Mark Hughes will still be manager there. Coventry, you know, finest hour came in this competition.
Yeah, Mark McNulty, 8 goals in his last 9 appearances as well, so he's a man in form. I think this could be close.
Ali?
Can I predict a draw in this?
Yeah, of course you can.
There you go.
It's the fan league. Home win, away win or draw.
Stoke will be taking Coventry back to the Britannia.
Yeah, I think that's that sounds a bit romantic, but not really. Newcastle against Luton. I thought possible shock here, but then I thought, yeah, it's St James's Park. Luton have wobbled a little bit, maybe tired legs.
Luton had that shock 4-0 defeat at Port Vale, didn't he? So I think, yeah, home win for this one, and Newcastle probably need a bit of a cup distraction.
Yeah.
I'm going to even it up in terms of having a go at George, because Oxford beat Newcastle in the cup last year, so there they are sort of liable to one of these, but I'm still going to stick with Newcastle.
All right, Wolves, Swansea. Wolves win.
Yeah, Wolves win.
Yeah, absolutely. Norwich, are they going to upset Chelsea?
No, they're just going to probably upset their own fans.
Newport Leeds. Leeds slip up here?
Could be. Newport, pretty good at home. Leeds, probably resting players. Let's go with a Newport win.
Funny pitch, that Rodney Parade pitch that they relayed in the summer. It looks like it's tearing up a bit now, which is hardly a surprise given that they share it with rugby teams and it rains a lot. Shrewsbury against West Ham. Shrewsbury beat David Moyes' Everton back in the day. Is he going to beat? Are Shrewsbury going to beat David Moyes' West Ham?
I don't see why not.
It's my tip for an upset, that one.
Yeah, let's go with Shrewsbury.
You get hard-working group like Shrewsbury up against Premier League team liable with for complacency.
No, I think West Ham win.
Fair enough. Spurs, Wimbledon. Ali?
A very large Spurs win.
Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll call that a banker. And can managerless Forest beat Arsenal?
No.
Yeah, well, anyone could beat Arsenal. Sorry, Tao.
That's
sorry.
The clip. Social pool, that's the clip for social. That's the Fan League. You download it from the App Store. Send a friend request to me. I'll invite you to join the Totally Football League. And together we can beat Lawrence White, the current league leader. We're coming for you, Lawrence. Also, if you've been trying to link up with us and nothing has happened, you'll be unsurprised to learn that it was entirely my fault. I hadn't done my updates on the app, but it's all fixed now, so you can play along with us now. When we come back, it's League One. League One, then. Well, no one else has any faith in them, but I still believe that Shrewsbury will pull this off. They beat Oldham 1-0 on New Year's Day, and they'll go into that cup tie of West Ham feeling pretty confident. Scunthorpe should be feeling good about themselves too. They're unbeaten in 5, and their 1-0 win over Bury keeps them 4th, behind Blackburn only on goal difference. Why? Because Rovers were held 1-1 by 7th-placed Rotherham. It's getting pretty packed in that peloton.
Wimbledon picked up a much-needed 2-0 victory at home to Southend, who have now lost 5 of the last 6. That's 5 of the last 6, Ian.
Thank you.
While Bristol Rovers fought back with goals in the 84th and 90th minutes to down Pompey 2-1. And it's miserable at Charlton at the moment, who lost 2-1 at home to Gillingham. What a job Steve Lovell's doing there.
There was no happy return for Darren Ferguson at London Road. His new Doncaster side drew 1-1 with his old Peterborough side. Rochdale, however, are in real trouble now. A home defeat to Blackpool leaves them languishing down in 23rd. And we'll hear more about them in a tick. Plymouth are roaring out of danger. Another win for them, this time over Walsall, and they're 16th now.
Bradford stay 5th thanks to a 2-1 win at Fleetwood, while Nick Powell scored again for Wigan as the league leaders won 1-0 at Northampton. And it's still 2 wins in 15 matches for MK Dons, who linger perilously above the drop zone after a 3-1 defeat at Oxford.
Right, let's have a look at Plymouth Argyle. A lot of changes to this show, but I will fight you in real life with a sword to keep the history section, which, unfortunately, I must start with an apology. A couple of weeks ago on the show, I suddenly announced that Bristol was the largest city never to have hosted top flight football. Even as I said it, a little voice in my head was like, are you sure about that one? It was complete bollocks. Bristol City have, of course, been in the top flight. It was a mistake made only slightly worse by watching Bristol City Man United a few days later and hearing the commentator make exactly the same mistake, which suggests that we've got listeners in high places, and also I extend my apologies to him too, if that's where he got it from. Why am I talking about this? Because Plymouth is the largest city never to have hosted top flight football. Plymouth. And I'm very sorry. The Argyle Football Club was founded in 1886, but they were crap. And they vanished in 1894, only to pop up again 3 years later as part of the Argyle Athletic Club. Why Argyle? Well, it could have been because of a local pub, the Argyle Tavern, a local street, Argyle Street. Or it could have been a nod to the Argyle and Sutherland Highlanders, who were stationed in Plymouth, and they had a pretty decent football team themselves. Either way, they went professional in 1903 and joined Division 3 South in 1920. Home Park is now in its third incarnation, having been destroyed by German bombers in the war and then demolished in rather less dramatic circumstances in the not-too-distant past during its refurbishment. It's a nice stadium too. In fact, it would have been hosting World Cup football this summer had the English FA not wildly overestimated their popularity with FIFA. But no, the closest Plymouth have come to hosting top-flight football was in 1953 when they came fourth in the second flight, and they went down in 1956. They have had some moments after that, though. Nearly 38,000 saw them beat Santos in 1973, Pelé very much included. They reached the League Cup semis in 1974, the FA Cup semis in 1984. But by the turn of the century, they're in danger of dropping out of the Football League altogether. And then Paul Sturrock arrived. He didn't just stop the bleeding, he revitalised the patient, overseeing two promotions in three seasons, though technically he left before the second one was secured. Plymouth had a good crack at it in the second flight. Ian Holloway actually had them in sight at the playoffs before he defected to Leicester. Sturrock, after a brief spell with Southampton, returned, and Plymouth survived for six seasons before they finally slipped back into the third and then straight into the fourth as the finances went down the pan. But new owner James Brent took over in 2011 and things slowly improved. Derek Adams arrived in 2015, promotion to the third division was secured in 2017, and after a slow start this year, Matt, things are looking up. Four wins in six.
Yeah, it's incredible to think that they were bottom at the end of November and spent 3 months down there in the bottom four. Lost nine of the first 12 games, only picked up one win, and they've completely turned it around.
And some great goals as well. Ali, you were showing us on your phone last night the Carey goal. Talk us through that one.
Well, I think Carey's probably got the greatest compilation of EFL goals over the last two or three seasons. He just scores spectacular goals practically once a month. And this one was both brilliantly League One and also world-class in the sense that it was pumped forward, flicked on, you know, all well and good at that stage, but running away from goal, Carey from the left-hand side of the box sort of half-volleyed it, looping over the goalkeeper's head into the far top corner. It was just a moment of quality that you see from Carey quite often, and as he was in League Two last season, he's the key player going forward for Plymouth.
I actually really liked his goal in the Christmas period. I can't remember who it was by. Plymouth fans will know. Well, the ball comes over, and again, he's running away from goal off to the right-hand side, and he leans to the right and then just jabs out a left foot outside of the boot and lobs it into the top corner.
Very hipster of you, Ian. You like the lesser well-known Carey goal.
I knew them before they were famous. Is he a player, you know, does he do that consistently? Has he got a future?
Absolutely, and it was a huge coup to even sign Carey when they were down in League Two, and it was, as far as I can tell, must have been down really to Derek Adams, who knew him from his time in Scotland. And Adams, probably the best signing Plymouth have made, even more so than Carey in the last 5 years, because he's shown that even if you're down in League Two, if you make the right appointment, someone with good contacts, someone, a good tactician, someone who deals with the media mostly well, although not always, then you can start moving up the leagues. And I think they were in a bit of a false position when they were down at the bottom. If you look at their starting 11 now in the on this good run, it's almost unrecognisable from the start of the season. They've added Diego Raga mid-season, early on in the season on a free, and that might be one of the signings in League One this season, because he's a player that probably should be playing at a higher level. And, you know, there's plenty of good players in that team. Ryan Taylor has never been a great goal scorer, but in terms of someone who can knit together the team from the front, playing with his back to goal, he's incredibly effective and has been for his whole career. And since he's been the sort of starting number nine, letting Carey and Ruben Lamirez play off him, they've done really, really well.
Producer Tayo here with some numbers. December the 8th, Plymouth are rock bottom with 17 points from 20 games. January the 1st, they're 16th with 31 from 26, with those four wins and two draws. First 13 games of the season, they got 6 points. Second 13 games, they got 25 points. Matt, what's happened here?
Oh, well, I think it's great to see that the club has shown loyalty to Derek Adams, actually, because when he was actually at Ross County, I was reading the other day, he was unceremoniously sacked by his own father.
What?
Yeah, his dad was the director of football. Both of them ended up leaving the club. But Plymouth have shown a bit more loyalty than that.
We should make an entire show on that.
That'd be a great sitcom, wouldn't it? Son, you're sacked again. No, I watched them early in the season in November when they picked up that 1-0 win at Bradford. And that was a brilliant performance there. Really solid defensively. They scored a fantastic goal on the counter-attack. David Fox played very well that day in midfield alongside Diago Raga. And I think it was two results, really, that gave them a bit of belief this season. They drew 1-1 against Shrewsbury and 1-1 against the mighty Blackburn Rovers in successive matches. That gave them a foundation, and they've built from there.
Diago Raga, there you go. We've all said it right. That's a clean sweep for the show. It really is New Year. Signed for Plymouth as free agent in October. Only stands out, doesn't he? As soon as you start watching Plymouth, you know he's a bit of a player.
Absolutely. Well, everything goes through him in the midfield. And, yeah, he's been such a key addition.
He's one of a number of players to have left Brentford with his stock very high and probably regret that move because his time at Leeds just didn't work out at all. And he's basically having to start again down in, well, in League One with Plymouth.
And his short-term contract actually ends next month. He's been offered terms to stay, albeit only until the end of the season. Can they keep him much longer than that, or is he bound straight back up again?
If he does leave, I think they almost deserve a fee because, you know, he was released by Leeds with about a week to go at the end of the transfer window, and Plymouth were the team that persuaded him to come. They've given him the game time. He's back into form, so he's got a lot to thank Plymouth for. It would be a shame to see him leave on a free. No doubt that there would be suitors in the Championship if he does.
Oh, and that's like, just in logistics, that's a hell of a move, isn't it? Leeds to Plymouth. You know, we always forget they're actually humans and they have to do these things, but the removal fees on that, well, whew, they'll be immense. They get big crowds in Plymouth, don't they? 10,000 on the Saturday before Christmas is fantastic. They're averaging 9,000 this season, even while they've been struggling. There's a new stand being developed as well. Things are really looking up, given the financial turmoil they're in not so long ago.
Yeah, I've never actually been to Home Park, but my first experience of the Plymouth fans was I went to the League Two final against Wimbledon a couple of years ago, 2016, when they actually lost that game. But the fans were amazing. I was sat in their section, actually, throughout the game and really got behind a team on what turned out to be quite a disappointing game. But I was amazed by how many they brought. I think they took 30,000 to Wembley on that occasion. So they do have a solid fan base down in the West Country. And, you know, you hope you talk about how they've never been in the top flight. And, you know, perhaps eventually that could be their dream.
It is a lovely ground to go to if you ever get the chance. I went down with the Carlisle fans for an ESPN story a few years back. And it was like a beautiful August day. And they've got this massive tent sort of round the back, a great big beer tent. It's all really, really friendly. And when the Carlisle fans got there, about 30-odd come off the coach, James Brent actually came out and met them and welcomed them to the club and had a chat with supporters' representatives and things like that. I think they have some kind of like loose alliance, Carlisle and Plymouth, because they have to make those long journeys. So there's an awful lot to like about Plymouth as well. We've been really nice today.
It's good to see a club, we don't always say it in the EFL, with such a positive atmosphere around the place, clearly being run very well over the last few years, and very much a club on the up.
It's funny, though, because early this morning I went on the Plymouth forums just to, you know, see what they're talking about. And on one of them, there was a thread suggesting that when they build a new road, I think heading towards this new stand, they should call it James Brent Way. In, you know, celebration of all the things he's done in the short time he's been there. And on the other one, there was a message for James Brent. I thought, oh, God, that'll be another one. And it was like, get your hands out your pockets and spend some money. Sorry, probably not in that voice. Get your hands out your pockets and spend some money. You know, assuming that they're not Glory supporters from London. They're quite why you'd do that. So, yes, that is Plymouth Argyle. Lots of love for Plymouth, and let's see if we get through this show without any complaints. Do you want to go? Of course you want to go. There's a free car park at the stadium, but be warned, it's usually full by 2:30, and it can take upwards of half an hour to leave after the game. Thank you, Matt. Tickets are priced a very reasonable £20 for adults and a very, very reasonable £7 for under-18s. Not too shabby there. When we come back after the break, we'll move to League Two. League Two, then. Notts County and Luton Town lost together in the last fixture of 2017 and recovered together in the first fixture of 2018. Gavin Nolan's lot overcame resurgent Port Vale at home, picking up a much-needed 1-0 win, while Nathan Jones's Hatters overcame surprise promotion candidates Lincoln 4-2 in a ferocious ding-dong that saw both teams reduced to 10 men before half-time. And what was I saying about Mansfield last week? Their 3-1 win over Carlisle means back-to-back wins for Steve Evans' Stags, and they are sixth.
Accrington were 1-0 up against Morecambe before Waterlog Pitch forced a game to be postponed. And that allowed Swindon to leapfrog Stanley as they beat Mark McGee's Barnet 2-1. While Colchester slipped out of playoff spots after being held to a 0-0 draw by Cambridge.
Exeter are really beginning to irritate me. They're a good team. We all know they're a good team. But they lost 2-1 away at Newport on New Year's Day. They've only won two of their last eight and they've crashed all the way to seventh. Harry Kewell's Crawley are scrambling up the table. They beat Yeovil 2-1. We'll hear more on that game shortly. And that's three wins in four for them. They go 16th, just behind Stevenage, who eviscerated Cheltenham 4-1.
Mark McNulty's seventh goal in his last eight league appearances earned Coventry a 1-0 win over Chesterfield, while Crewe, Ian's pick for relegation, let's not forget, have now won three out of five, beating Grimsby 2-0 to climb 9 points clear of the bottom two. But Forest Green are still in the brown stuff after losing 2-1 at home to Wickham.
It's almost as if I have no idea what I'm talking about. Let's have a look at Yeovil then. Yeovil, founded in 1895 as the Yeovil Casuals, but perhaps realising that this made them sound like a 30-strong mob of WKD swilling Stone Island wearing yoblets, they became Yeovil Town in 1907, and they merged with Petters United to become Yeovil and Petters United, and then they went all the way back to Yeovil Town after the Second World War. In 1949, they were responsible for one of the great FA Cup shocks of all time, when they beat Sunderland, who in those days were actually really good. They beat them 2-1, but it didn't go so well in the next round. They got Manchester United and got walloped 8-0. Now, do you know why they're called the Glovers?
No.
Because Yeovil was famous for making gloves. Gloves, in fact, have been there for centuries, with the first reference to Glovers coming in 1349 in a report about a group of local tanners and glovers who duffed up the Bishop of Bath. Sadly, it all came to an end in 1989. The last glove manufacturers in Yeovil, Freak and Gifford Limited, closed down, blaming cheap foreign imports. But as the glove industry died, the football began to thrive. Yeovil moved to Huish Park in 1990. They came fourth in the conference in 1993, which is as well as they'd ever done at that time. And after a brief detour to the Smithian League, they bounced back up in 1997, hired Gary Johnson, father of Lee, of course, in 2001, and entered the Football League in 2003. Got better after that. They won League Two in 2005. In 2013, they won the playoffs, earning themselves a single season in the second flight. But that is where it all went wrong. Back-to-back relegations followed, and to be honest, they've struggled ever since. And Ali, they continue to struggle, don't they?
That promotion to the Championship, and it seems ridiculous to say, it was one of the worst things that could have happened to them. And the reasons for that are almost purely financial, which is a shame, really. But essentially, they found it so hard to compete the season that they were there. And once they got relegated, because they'd probably overextended themselves financially in order to try and compete and try and stay in the Championship, they hit huge issues down in League One and now in League Two, losing hundreds of thousands of pounds every year and just financially in a bit of a tears. And now, well, now they've just become one of those not very wealthy League Two teams with a thin squad, asking their manager basically to perform miracles with a squad with a pretty low wage budget, and they're finding it very, very tough. I think it's been a really difficult few years for the fans. There's been some unrest towards the owner for sure, John Fry, and you know, we've just spoken about Plymouth glowingly about a team on the up, and you just can't say the same about Yeovil.
Darren Way, the manager, I thought he was very good. He had Harry Redknapp in as a sort of football advisor, a move which didn't actually result in Harry Redknapp taking the job, which
yeah,
I think
Harry Redknapp in as a PR stunt is what I'd say.
But he didn't sort of complain about it. There was no kind of, you know, there didn't appear to be any problems. He was complaining about a lot of things on Saturday, but more on that later. Is he in trouble, or is he basically doing the best anyone can do in that position?
I definitely think he's doing the best anyone can do in that situation. He said in November it's quite difficult to manage Yeovil at the moment, and I think that could be understatement of the season. But like Ali said, it's you know, that promotion to the Championship was really what began the slide for them. And I was reading an article by Seb White on When Saturday Comes, and the line that stood out for me was football league on the pitch, but non-league off it. And that's really where the club are right now.
Yeah, where they are right now is 20th in League Two. They're only 7 points off relegation. As we've seen this season, it's been just bursts of teams that you thought were down and out suddenly soaring back up to lower mid-table. Let's talk about the game at Crawley, because it's absolutely extraordinary. Well, Matt, talk us through it.
Well, Yeovil, two men sent off in the first half, and so that's almost an impossible situation to hold on to a lead. And they conceded, obviously, in the 98th minute. Thomas Verheyt, big boy. Have you seen him, the Crawley striker? Massive. 6'4", I think, and built like a brick outhouse, or as I used to say at school, a brick horse, because I always got the idiom confused. And
That's why he's down in League Two, to be fair.
My friends ripped it out of me for a long time, and for some reason I brought it up again now. But yeah, and it was the drone incident, really, that allowed Crawley to regroup. And Harry Kuehl said afterwards, you know, it was a chance for me to say to the players, that's not what we told you to do. We told you to do this. And then they went and nabbed the winner. And it really was abysmal defending for that winning goal as well.
Yeah, let's just hear what happened when that drone arrived.
To remain in your seats or in the stand. Drone will be sorted out very, very soon. The players are back on the pitch as soon as possible. Thank you.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of that in football these days. Drones causing causing the game almost to be abandoned. They got rid of it in the end. Yeovil fans very unhappy, as Matt says. It clearly didn't benefit their team. Credit to them, in fairness, though, for basically doing half a game with nine men and keeping the score at 1-1. Does that indicate some spirit there?
Well, what indicates the biggest spirit for Yeovil this season? So they lost the first game of the season, 8-2 at Luton.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, you know, if you're a fan of a club and you see that happen with everything else that's going on off the pitch at Yeovil as well, you just think this is going to be a long, miserable campaign. And the fact that they are clear of the bottom two at the moment, it just shows what a job Darren Way's done. And yeah, there is spirit there. I watched them away at Wickham earlier in the season. They only lost 2-1 there, and they were in the game throughout against the Wickham side that are chasing automatic promotion. They've got Omar Sawumney, former Ipswich youth product, which we touched on earlier, their youth set up there, and he did really well against Adebayo Akinfenwa that weekend at Wigan. He was tasked with man-marking the striker, and it really was a great battle, and he was obviously sent off at the weekend. And
yeah, I've got to say, he was very unfortunate there. I don't think there was any anything.
It's one of those ones where he sort of ran across the back of the on-running striker and he's gone down pretty quickly, and that's that.
The club are appealing that one, and you can understand why. Somerset Live described the refereeing performance as dreadful.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
I didn't see the first booking for the bloke who got sent off, the first Connor Smith, the first red card. But the second, I thought,
yeah, the second was
fair.
Pretty much cut and dry.
The Sawunmi one, quite hard to tell just from the highlights on TV whether he touched him or not. If he did, then I suppose it's probably a red. But it did look very soft. It was just the end of a really chaotic Christmas period for them, in which they started with wins against Exeter and Cheltenham, which was a great run. And then on the evening of the 29th, they were 2-0 up against Morecambe away, and then 3-2 up against Morecambe in the 84th minute before losing 4-3. So, you know, at one point it was looking like 3 wins out of 3, and instead 2 wins and 2 losses, and maybe a bit of a loss of momentum, maybe.
Yeah, well, the good news just keeps on coming for Yeovil. Captain James Bailey is now out for 2 months. He was stretchered off in that win at Cheltenham. So not only is form going, but the injuries piling up as well. They have got Bradford in the FA Cup. And it's like most teams, it's kind of a distraction they don't want now, isn't it?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, sometimes, obviously, cup runs can generate a bit of positivity. You can play with a bit of pressure off because you're not locked in some sort of relegation battle. It's a one-off game and all those other cliches. But, you know, they've got players like Otis Khan and fella Olamola, who's on loan from Southampton, who it sounds like they're trying to sign permanently, which I think would be a really good move. Yeovil are the type of team that ideally would be signing young players on frees, trying to basically build them up, give them game time and sell them on. That's the way that they're going to try and punch upwards financially. And that's one way of doing it. So I don't see why in a one-off game against Bradford, who might take their eye off the ball, they couldn't cause some problems.
Two massive games coming up for Yeovil. But Matt, the biggest problems, weirdly, are off the pitch, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of concerns on the Yeovil message boards about the future of the club and the stadium. I mean, in the summer, the club announced that the stadium and land around it were transferred to a new holding company. And the fans worry whether it's going to be sold beneath the club, really. And they've brought in a football consultant at a view over this season, and he said actually just on Christmas Eve that any offers of investment into Yeovil will be considered. So it really does look bleak, and whatever situation they're in League Two this season, there's a real battle for the future.
Well, getting back on the pitch, those two big games after the FA Cup match and the small matter of the Football League trophy, 13th of January, they go away to Port Vale, who, as Matt said, beat Luton over Christmas. And then on the 20th of January, they've got Jack Lester's Chesterfield, who were seemingly climbing out of it and are now in all sorts of bother again. So they're two absolutely massive games there. If you want to go, and you should go, the stadium car park is behind the away end and it costs £2. But there's plenty of on-street parking as well. Adult tickets range from £18 to £23. It's £14 for under 22s and a very generous £6 for under 16s. That is Yeovil. Now we're moving to William Hill. Let's review the business today. Ipswich, they were on the fringes of the playoffs. You know, a couple of results go their way and they might sneak in. They're not now, they're 12th. What can I get on Ipswich to go up?
They're actually the last team that we have priced up for promotion at 100-1.
Yeah.
So quite some way behind the teams at the head of the betting.
That does seem pretty accurate, in fairness. Now, Plymouth, on the forums this morning, I also encountered someone who claimed to have put some money on them to go up. Such was his level of enthusiasm with this recent run of form. That seems a pretty bold bet, but where does it stand?
Even more unlikely. at least we have them priced up. They are 300-1.
Wow, OK. And Yeovil to be relegated back into non-league.
Well, we did touch on the relegation for League Two in the preview show, or the review show, or the prediction show. Delete as applicable there. And it's so congested down at the bottom of the table that Yeovil are quite a short price at 7-2 to go down, but that makes them fifth favourite. So there are still four teams ahead of them in the betting. Forest Green now odds on, having been 11-10 this time last week.
All right, this weekend it's FA Cup, Liverpool Everton on the Friday night. That's not really in our remit. Fleetwood Town against Leicester is. What can we get on a shock for Fleetwood there?
19-5. They haven't been having the best of times in recent weeks. And as we've touched on, perhaps with Yeovil, this is perhaps a distraction they could avoid. Leicester 13-20. I reckon a pretty easy win for the away side here.
Not one of us had any confidence in Norwich beating Chelsea. Is that well founded?
Yes, 6-1 for Norwich to win. Chelsea 2-5. I think Chelsea, even if they do put out a few of the reserve team players, well, certainly the ones that they still have at the club, they should be able to win this one relatively comfortably.
Newport against Leeds. I mean, you know, it could rain. The pitch could tear up. Any chance?
Again, they're 18-5, so quite a long price there. With Leeds 13-20 and the draw 11-5.
My tip for a shock: Shrewsbury against West Ham. Am I mad?
There's worse tips.
Nicest thing anyone's ever said about my tips.
we've certainly had worse tips over the last few weeks in the fan league. But yeah, Shrewsbury 11-4, West Ham odds on 10-11. I think West Ham may well put a second string team out, and I think Shrewsbury could well. At least take this to a replay.
Matt Stanger, of course, said anyone can beat Arsenal. And Nottingham Forest, anyone?
No.
well, that's everyone offended, so that's the balance we're looking for.
Yep, Nottingham Forest 5-1 to win, Arsenal 4-9 in the draw, 100-30. I think Arsenal this season have shown a little more strength in depth with their squad, and I think a couple of the fringe players again should be too strong for Forest.
Okay, that is the William Hill odds. Joe, if we want to follow you on Twitter for more stuff like this,
footy_Joe.
There we go. And that is all the time that we've got. Thank you so much, chaps. Ali, where can we hear you and George again?
You can hear us on Not The Top 20 Pod and follow us on Twitter at NTT20Pod.
Where can we follow you on Twitter?
You can follow me personally if you really want on at the Makalele Roll.
You really should do that. I've been doing it for years. Matt, in our New Year's enthused effort to cross-promote, anything good on the set pieces this week?
Well, I'm really hoping we can continue our Everton project in the Football Manager series, but we'll see about that.
Yeah, that's a bit awkward. I promise I'll have that soon. Yes, thank you very much as well to debutant producer Ty, who's dragged himself in here with the back of the plague by the looks of him. We will be back next week. And listen, if you like the show, we would absolutely not be averse to you letting people know. Write a review on iTunes. We like them. They make us look good. And if you want us to cover your team, get in touch with us. Twitter, Facebook. Paul Hankey's here now. He'll be there for you. But until then, dear listener, see you next Tuesday.
The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email us at sales@muddyneesmedia.com.